Welcome to the Sleepy Cues podcast, where Linda Schmulowitz
and Jessica Sawicki will share answers to all your questions related to your children's sleep and parenting of young children. We are both certified gentle sleep coaches.
Thanks for tuning in to hear the answers to the many questions that come up with the families we work with. Thanks for joining us on the Sleepy Cues podcast today. I'm Linda Schmulowitz, owner of Sleep Tight Consultants, and I'm joined here by Jessica Sawicki. And we are honored and privileged to be interviewing Jill Raven. And we're going to let her tell you all about herself. So Jill, please tell us a little bit about yourself and how you began your career as a lactation consultant and as a feeding therapist.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. So I am a pediatric speech pathologist and lactation consultant, and I've been working with the infant to three-year-old population for over 37 years. And I originally moved here after going to school in Boston to Chicago, and I worked in a program where I did a combination of young infants to three, and then a 3 to 21 program. And I got a crash course in feeding because in Boston, on the East Coast at the time, speech pathologists did not do any feeding. I knew nothing about feeding. I had no education in it. And I worked with a speech pathology assistant who taught me everything. Literally, she was amazing. And we saw very complex kids, a lot of kids with cerebral palsy, really scary kids to help eat. There's a lot of coughing and scary stuff. So that's where the feeding piece started. And then I went on to work in a hospital, and I've actually worked in three different area hospitals in the Chicago area, both as a speech pathologist and a lactation consultant. I became a lactation consultant 14 years after being a speech pathologist. I realized that if I'm supposed to be a feeding expert, I need to be a feeding expert in all areas of feeding, and that's how it happened. So now I have a private practice in the north suburbs of Chicago. I combine both of those professions together quite frequently. I see children with very complex feeding, breastfeeding difficulties. It might be a child with cleft palate, a baby with Down syndrome, a baby with tongue tie, any kind of complicated breastfeeding case I will see. I work with children with complicated feeding issues, like they might be tube fed, they might be aversive, it might be an extremely preterm infant that's really struggling with eating and gaining weight. So I see a lot of complex feeding cases, but I also see neurotypical babies whose parents are trying to make that transition to solids. Maybe they're really stuck with baby-led weaning and they have no idea what to do. I guide with that, and I teach classes to parents for neurotypical development and neurodivergent development and teach parents exactly how to make that transition. I work through the state in early intervention, so I often start with babies as infants and follow them until they're 3 years of age, starting with breastfeeding, going to solids, then doing the speech and language piece. I will sometimes even start prenatally if someone has a diagnosis, and I will coach them on how to prepare at birth, what you're going to do. You have a baby with Down syndrome. This is what you would do to help with breastfeeding. I co-moderate a support group that's free for pregnant, pumping, and breastfeeding moms with babies with Down syndrome. And that's a specialty area for me. And I volunteer at a place here in Deerfield, Illinois called Gigi's Playhouse, which is a Down syndrome achievement center where I run a weekly group for stimulating and facilitating language in that population. This achievement center is completely free to families and it goes from birth to adulthood. And I created an approach called adapted baby-led weaning back in 2010. And I wrote a book about that approach with Jill Rapley, who's the pioneer of baby-led weaning. And that was published in 2022. And that just talks about how we would help a baby with more feeding challenges to learn to self-feed, but it follows all the principles of the baby-led weaning approach. So lots of different things.
Yeah, I'm amazing. When do you sleep?
I don't. I don't sleep a lot. I'm going to be honest. I'm busy.
Wow. That is amazing. You do such great work. I wish I had met you and lived in Chicago with my youngest. I'm a very big choking fear. That's my biggest fear with my kids, and teaching solids by my fourth child, I had so much anxiety, I actually was not even feeding her. So I wish I had met you then, but I know this podcast is going to be really helpful for all our listeners because solids is a very big topic with our clients and our listeners as it relates to sleep, but this is going to be super helpful. So let's just get into it. First off, at what age do you recommend starting solids with the little ones?
Okay, so this is going to be a very firm answer, 6 months. And I'm going to tell you that everybody is in such a rush to start solid foods There is no rush, right? Babies have to be developmentally ready to do this. And I see so many parents that are being told by physicians to start at 4 months. This is the new trend. It's going back to 4 months again. And I think the reason it's going back to 4 months again is there's some new research on allergies. And there's a protocol for allergies. If you have egg allergy in the family, which will put you at higher risk for peanut allergy, then earlier exposure at 4 months is warranted. But there's very specific guidelines with that. You should be covered in eczema. You've got that extreme allergy in your family. And I feel like what doctors are doing now is they're transitioning to everybody and saying 4 months. The most important thing with solid foods is babies need to be able to sit upright in support. They don't need to be sitting independently, but they need to be able to sit upright in a chair without falling over. And if you hand them something, a toy or a food, they should easily be able to get it to their mouth. If they're leaning forward and putting their mouth on the food, they're not ready. They need that core strength and that upright positioning. That's what we're looking for. Feeding is very developmental. Some babies are going to take to it immediately. Some babies are going to start and do better if they start at 7 months of age. There is absolutely no rush. You are not missing anything if you start a month later. Parents are so worried about volume and allergies. It is fine. We need to follow the baby's development when we introduce solids. Most important thing. So 6 months. And if you look at any of our agencies nationally and internationally, World Health Organization, American Academy of Pediatrics, 6 months is when we should be starting solids.
Yeah, this comes up in group. I mean, all the time. I actually do a session where I talk about development, but I talk a lot about solids and really emphasize. And I'm like, hey, here's the information. Do what you want with it. But I always say to them, so does anybody have a lot of free time on their hands? And they all look at me like, no, we have no time. And I'm like, okay, this is one more thing you have to do. You do not need to rush to do this. Give it the time that your child needs. So.
I love that you say that. That's such a great way to put it. And I think also, here's another important thing. If you are introducing solids before 6 months, you are interfering with the complete nutrition of breast milk and formula. You are interfering with it. So honestly, there's no reason that it needs to be done. And the other thing is, in my personal opinion, no baby needs to be fed by somebody else. No baby at 4 months can feed themselves. What that means is they're going to have to be fed by an adult. And when that happens, adults are always putting more food in to that baby than that baby would take naturally if they were feeding themselves. So what that can also do is lead to obesity. There are studies that show that children who start solids closer to the 4 month point have more difficulty with obesity later in life, probably because somebody was determining their satiation for them versus them determining it on their own.
And this is the other thing that I explained, like when your child is feeding themselves, which is what we're going to get more into, then they are controlling that as opposed to like, oh, there's, 4 ounces in this jar of baby food and I have to get all of this into you.
Exactly. And we want it to be child directed. We want babies to be intuitive eaters, right? Eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full. What happens is when we're dictating that for children, they don't learn to determine when they're hungry or full. That's why we struggle with diets in our culture, right? Because we overeat. We need to be intuitive and eat when we're hungry and stop when we're full. If we do more of a child directed approach and let the baby be in charge, that's exactly what will happen.
So, can you share with our audience exactly what is baby-led weaning, like specifically?
Absolutely. And I think an important thing to say about baby-led weaning is whenever you're learning about any type of approach, you always want to go back to the creator, right? If you want to really learn about that, I would go to Jill Rapley and Tracy Marquette's book. You know, Jill Rapley is the one who created this approach. And I think what happens is there's lots of professionals, there's lots of moms that have social media accounts, and they start to dilute the message of what baby-led weaning is. Jill Rapley and I have a really good time of like laughing about all the things that we see, what people think baby-led weaning is. In fact, I've been kicked off moms' Facebook groups. People will tag me and say, you know, this, my child will not pick up any food. They're not self-feeding. So I'll recommend, you know, do a preloaded spoon with like a mashed food or a puree. The second I mention spoon or puree, I get kicked out of the group. Now, baby-led weaning, and I'll explain what baby-led weaning really means in a second, but we are not anti-spoon and anti-puree in baby-led weaning. That is a complete myth. You can talk about spoons and purees. Jill Rapley and I, we have no problem with those foods. We just don't believe that someone has to put it in the baby's mouth. We preload the spoon and we hand it to them and they do it themselves. I use purees all the time and preloaded
Wow.
spoons.
I had
So
no idea. I'm going to fully admit that I really always thought that baby-led weaning had to do with the fact that you you gave the food as is and nothing with puree. But you're saying it's not about the texture of the food. It's more about who's doing the feeding.
Who's doing it? The baby is feeding. We are not feeding the baby. We're not acting on the baby. They do it all. So there's that myth, right? And I didn't realize how much people didn't understand what baby-led weaning was until Jill Rapley did a webinar and on her approach, baby-led weaning. And a week later, I did mine on adaptive baby-led weaning. I was a spectator, right? I was watching the webinar and I was watching the chat. It was all therapists that were watching her webinar. And so many people in the chat were like saying, oh my goodness, I thought I knew what baby-led weaning was until I saw this lecture. So it's important because there's this divisiveness, right? It's either sticks of food and real food or it's purees and a spoon. Not true. It's all baby-led. It's the baby feeding themselves. So in the early 2000s, Jill Rapley, who was a health visitor, right? A health visitor nurse in the UK, which would be like a public health nurse here. She coined this term baby-led weaning. In the UK, weaning just means you're starting to introduce solids. If someone came up to you in the UK and said, oh, my baby's started weaning, that means they're starting to introduce solids. So with this approach, babies are self-feeding from the onset. Okay, so whatever the family is eating, the baby is eating, we're just going to adapt it to the level of the child. There's no specially made baby foods or special things that we need to do. We just look at the foods we're eating. So for example, if the family's eating mashed potatoes, everyone else, the older people might be eating it with a fork or a spoon. With a baby, we can put it on a preloaded spoon and hand it to them, or we can throw a bunch of mashed potatoes on their tray and they'll eat it with their hands. If the family is eating steak, maybe the rest of the family is cutting it into small pieces, but the baby might be eating the bone of a steak or might be licking and tasting the strip of steak. So we adapt it to what the baby's skill level is. And so that is how it works. It's the baby feeds themselves from the beginning. In the first 3 months of this approach, babies are not taking in a lot of volume of food. They're learning hand to mouth, they're exploring lots of tastes, and they're learning to chew. After about 8 weeks or so, their skills are going to get better and better, and they're going to start to take in more volume. So that's the really cool thing about this approach. No pressure. Everybody eats together. Very enjoyable. Kids are getting lots of flavorful, nutrient-dense foods, right? Table foods have more calories, more flavor, more nutrition, way better. And look at all the things that we're seeing in pouches and baby foods now. I was just listening to a podcast yesterday about those applesauce pouches with the cinnamon in it, and that the cinnamon had lead in it. And the public health officials were seeing all this high lead level in babies around the country, and they were trying to figure it out. And it was coming from pouches. Mm-hmm. So this is really kind of what pushed baby-led weaning into the forefront in 2019. They were finding all these heavy metals in baby foods, right? They were finding lead, cadmium, all these different things when they were testing baby foods, and parents got scared. And this is why they started to shift more to doing more table foods versus, you know, processed baby foods, because they weren't trusting the baby food companies because they're like, what's in our food? And now I'm a little freaked out by that. I'm thinking, okay, obviously lead can't affect us like it can affect a baby, but what other things could be in these foods that we're giving babies that can impact them? It's really kind of scary.
So I will fully admit, for all four kids, I actually made the food and I pureed it. I would steam it. So I didn't really do the pouches, mm-hmm. but I cannot give my 6-month-old a bone of steak.
Well, see her anxiety.
Yeah, just Jessica, you know what? What I'm going to do is I'm going to send you my class so you can see and you can watch, because those babies, when you give them a bone of steak, they can't choke on it. They might gag a little bit. All babies gag. They gag with their fingers in their mouth. What they're doing is tasting and exploring and working on their jaw, learning to move their tongue side to side. If they start to pull it and get pieces off, we stop using that food. So we pick foods based on the skill level of that baby. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, it's interesting to me that you've been kicked out of some of those Facebook groups, because I will tell moms, I'll say, like, there's some good baby-led weaning Facebook groups. You can learn a lot, but if you're not doing it, you know, 100%, you don't need to share that in there. Just don't say anything, because they will shame you or kick you out, which is horrible.
That's with any Facebook group.
It is. And it's terrible, because parents are doing the best they can. You know, navigating solids is hard. No one really teaches you, and you're going to hear a 1,000 different things from different people. So I think it's really important. And that's an important thing to tell parents too, is picking who you're following. Make sure you're following a professional, a dietitian, a feeding therapist, someone who's seen lots of different babies, right? I've seen thousands of babies of every ability. If it's an account with just a mom and her baby, her expertise is her baby, mm-hmm. right? And again, a dilution of what the approach actually is. So she might have different opinions as to, you know, what baby-led weaning is. And also too, professionals are going to be a little bit better, obviously, about selecting foods that are appropriate for skill. They're going to do things safely. And I'm very scrutinizing in terms of who I recommend for parents to follow to make sure that they're following people that are giving accurate information.
So, you know, a lot of times you go to your pediatrician at 4 months and they say, okay, you can start solids now. And this is the issue I think comes up all the time, especially when you're a new parent, your first child. When you're down the line, you might be like, okay, fine, I don't need to listen to everything you say. But, you know, new parents think of everything that their pediatrician says as like gospel, like must follow this. And mm-hmm. so just it's so hard because they're hearing one thing from their pediatrician. Oh, you should do this. Okay, I guess I have to. There's going to be something bad that happens if I don't. Or, okay, now others are saying 6 months. So how should new parents think of that information that they're being told by their pediatrician?
Yes, it's very complex when that happens. And it's very confusing for parents. And what I tell them is that doctors have a lot of information that need to know, right? They really need to be able to take care of your child medically. They're not necessarily an expert in nutrition. And sometimes if they're busy, they may not be keeping up on what's most current in their profession, even though American Academy of Pediatrics and World Health Organization are saying 6 months. So what I tell parents is you might have to do a little bit more searching and research yourself to figure out how you're going to approach solids and find those people out in the community, find your dietitians, find your feeding therapists who really understand feeding and all the developmental things that go along with it, all the skills you need to be able to chew and manage different foods. And that might be the best way to really figure out how you're going to forge forward and do this. And I think it is very overwhelming and confusing for parents because sometimes in one practice, they'll be told something different by every other person. Mm-hmm. I also educate and I teach this virtual live class and that I have on demand as well. And I talk a lot about in there on how to determine when children are ready and why it's children at 4 months are not ready to feed themselves. And I do a lot of videos and showing parents and saying, look, why are we trying to do this so early when your child's not ready? It's almost like toilet training. When parents try to start toilet training too early and it takes forever because the child is not developmentally ready. But when they are developmentally ready, they're toilet trained in 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So it's sometimes we're not waiting for that developmental readiness and we're imposing something that the baby isn't ready for. So I think parents just have to do a lot of reading and research on their own, and they're just going to have to forge forward and figure out what's going to work best for their family. But from a developmental, digestive, and nutritional standpoint, there is no reason to start solids before 6 months of age.
It sounds a lot like with sleep when our clients come to us, Linda, and they're like, oh, my pediatrician told me to cry it out at, you know, 12 weeks because we should just do it. And then it doesn't work because developmentally they're not, you know, ready for it. So it seems like same thing with feeding. Go do your homework and, you know, get your specialist that can help you with that.
And Jessica, I wanted to say that too, that, you know, that is the hugest problem, right? With the sleep. Parents are expecting things at 8 weeks and 12 weeks that are not monthly appropriate. In this current culture, they want everything done like that.
Yeah, quick.
So we have to let them realize that development, everyone develops differently and some are going to take more time than others.
No, yeah. Very good point.
The way I tend to explain it is that your pediatrician is very well trained on how to keep your child healthy. That's what they go to school for. When your child has a fever, when they are sick, when they need vaccinations, that's what you're talking to them about. But they don't really get any behavioral health training. And I mean, Jess has too. We've worked with families where one of the parents is a pediatrician and they will say like, you don't learn any of this in medical school. And I'll say, that wasn't your job. That's not what you're supposed to be learning there. And so that's why pediatricians shouldn't necessarily give that kind of guidance.
I agree. And my cousin is a pediatric resident and I had to work with her. Her daughter really struggled with solids and her big push was volume. And we really had to take a step back and slow it down. And it was a very good learning experience for her because they're not taught any of these things.
No, true. Exactly.
So going back to baby-led weaning and having kids explore and basically do it on their own, can you give some guidance for the parents that say that their child only wants to play with it? So you sit them down, everyone's sitting at the dinner table, child is playing with it, not actually putting it in his mouth, you know, throwing it all over the floor. And then the parents are concerned that their child didn't eat enough. And so that's why they're waking up in the middle of the night, because they're hungry. And so we hear a lot about like not eating enough during the day. So that's why they're up in the middle of the night. And sometimes that's true, but oftentimes it's not. And especially with the parents who are doing baby-led weaning and they're letting their child decide to eat or not to eat.
Right. I think a lot of times it's perception. Everyone's so worried about volume, volume, volume. I think the important thing to say to parents is when we start solids, it's again, it's not about volume. That first 3 months, breast milk and formula are going to be enough for that baby. And what will happen is usually after about that 8 week point, 8 to 12 weeks is when babies really start to pick up and take in more volume because their skills get better. If a parent is putting their child in the chair and they're just playing with the food and making a mess, they just may not be ready, but that's okay. That's still food exploration. It's a positive food experience. We always want to eat with children. Children learn by observing, right? So if we eat together as a family, that's babies are going to be motivated because they're going to see everyone else eating. Another reason sometimes that babies, if you put food in front of them and they don't eat it, sometimes what's being selected for them is not appropriate for their skill. If you put a mashed food on a tray for a 6-month-old, a lot of 6-month-olds do not know or understand yet to scoop it with their hand and bring it to their mouth. That takes a little bit longer. So in a situation like that, we might stick a preloaded spoon in it and hand it to them. Or, you know, we might give them a strip of food and dip it in that mashed food. And that's how they get it to their mouth. Sometimes it's what we're offering and how we offer it that makes it difficult for the baby. And babies are smart. Like if we put a small piece of food on a tray for a 6-month-old, they do not have the fine motor dexterity to pick up that food and get it to their mouth. So guess what they're going to do? They might smack it around with their hands and mush it, but they're not going to be able to pick it up. So a lot of the problem, especially with baby-led weaning, is parents are not selecting foods that are appropriate for the level of their baby. That is one thing I can say about my book. It's got a chart in there and it tells you exactly what to select and how to do it based on age and skill. And I think that's what parents struggle the most with baby-led weaning, because they have no idea what to present and how to present it.
That's so helpful, because it is hard to know, like, what do I feed you? You know, I think it's not intuitive to a lot of us as parents. So what kinds of strategies can you recommend for parents who are looking to start baby-led weaning? Do you recommend any of the online feeding programs? What ones are good? What ones would you stay away from?
Yes. So there are a lot of great ones out there. I would have to say, if I had to pick my one of my absolute favorites, I love Baby-Led Wean Team with Katie Ferraro. She is a dietitian in California. She has an unbelievable podcast that is so educational and informative. She has allergists on there. She has people that are doing research about the heavy metals in food. There's so many educational things on there, but here's what I like about Katie. Katie literally has a course where she takes parents through the first 10 days on how to do it. And she gives them lots of offerings of nutritionally sound foods that you would offer. And she has a very systematic way of introducing allergens. I love her stuff. I utilize her stuff all the time when I'm working with families. So that's a great resource, because here you have a great professional like Katie, who understands baby-led weaning and is a dietitian, that's supporting all that information. I also love Solid Starts. I think Solid Starts is a great program. They have two occupational therapists on there that are feeding therapists and friends of mine. They're brilliant women, and they give a lot of that information for that account. Jenny Best, she started that account. What she's done for baby-led weaning and how she's pushed it into our culture is amazing. So those are two great accounts that I like, because there's a lot of professional support behind them.
Nice. That's super helpful.
Can you share a little bit about what the research says about the benefits of baby-led weaning and why parents should look into doing this?
Yes. So there are so many great benefits. The one thing that I will tell you is that there definitely needs to be more research about baby-led weaning. It's so individual. And again, what some people think is baby-led weaning may not actually be what we would think baby-led weaning is. But here's what I will tell you. Number one, some of the research has shown that babies who do baby-led weaning are no more at risk for choking than children who are being spoon-fed by someone else. And part of that is because babies who do baby-led weaning are learning to move things around in their mouth, gnawing and chewing from the onset. Babies who are used to someone spoon-feeding them for the first 3 months, when you start to give them pieces of food, they're going to use that same methodology. They're going to put it in their mouth and they're just going to try to swallow it versus moving it around and trying to chew it. Where those baby-led babies are the ones that they've had all that chewing experience, they're more accustomed to moving food around in their mouth. So it's very, very helpful from a skill perspective. It's also therapeutic, right? It's constant eye-hand coordination, looking down, picking things up. It's using your jaw. You're getting an unbelievable sensory experience. Gnawing or shaving an apple with your gums versus just drinking applesauce is a completely different sensory experience. Foods that we eat actually shape our oral cavity. If you're doing lots of chewing and gnawing things, it's going to help you create a bigger and stronger jaw. That's going to help with how your teeth come in. That's going to create more of a patent airway. People don't even realize that how you eat shapes your face, right? So if you're doing lots of soft things, drinking lots of foods and eating soft foods, you're not getting that same kind of input and strength in your mouth that you would from real foods. There's also research that shows that babies who are taught to transition to solids with a baby-led approach have higher language comprehension and language expression skills. And I think the reason that is because when you do baby-led weaning, everybody sits together. You just put the food in front of the baby, they're feeding themselves, and everybody's conversing. They're getting lots of language modeling. However, if you are doing a traditional spoon feeding approach, you're concentrating on putting food in that baby's mouth, and it's not as conversational. You're not eating together, you're feeding the baby versus having a meal together. So there's so many things. Also, babies who do baby-led weaning, they're exposed to texture earlier. We know that if babies are not receiving textured foods by 9 to 10 months of age, that sometimes they'll become pickier and more resistant to texture. So these baby-led babies are getting so many experiences of independence, becoming an intuitive eater, learning to chew. There's so many things going on with this process. It's absolutely fascinating. But I think the key is with this approach that parents do need some guidance. If parents can be guided on what to select and how to present it, it's a great way to introduce solids, and it's a much safer way to introduce solids, and it creates an incredibly independent and efficient eater.
No, that's so helpful. It reminds me of a question that I get from parents a lot. They'll say, well, you know, my baby doesn't have any teeth yet, or something to that effect. And I'll say, well, they don't actually even get their molars until much later. You don't chew with your front teeth, which are the ones that come in first.
Right.
And then I think about my children, neither of them had a single tooth till after they were one. And my daughter ate hard salami at 9 months. And that was like her favorite food.
Absolutely. You can absolutely chew without your teeth. And those gums are so firm and hard, right? And those front teeth, that's for biting and tearing. And then they can move it around to the gums and chew it. So not having teeth is absolutely not an indication that you can't do solids and not chew. So that's, you're 100% right. You don't need teeth to be able to eat lots of different foods.
I would tell them, stick your finger in their mouth. When they bite down with their gums, it hurts.
It's hard.
They're very strong.
There's also some theories too that if you are chewing and gnawing on lots of different things, it's actually going to help with dental eruption because you're putting pressure on those gums and helping those teeth break through.
Interesting. So you've talked a bit about this, this is so helpful, but for parents who kind of want to work their way into maybe feeding more whole foods, you know, and starting off with purees, they can do that. And then just having a preloaded spoon, it sounds like that's kind of the way you get into that.
Absolutely. Generally what I do, and I teach this in my class, I sometimes will, if a baby's sitting up really well, I'll even start this at 5.5 months. I'll start with firm strips of food. And those, Jessica's going to cringe when I say this. I'll do a raw carrot. I'll do celery. I'll do a romaine lettuce rib. I might do a strip of steak. I might do a rib bone. And we call those food teethers, right? And we cut them about 3 inches in length. And so what happens is the baby has a handle and then enough coming out of the top and they just gnaw on it. They're tasting it. They're getting lots of flavor and learning to bring hands to mouth. It's like a teething toy, but it's food. So it's giving flavor. And here's the thing. No baby at 6 months, 5 to 6 months, has enough jaw strength or core strength to bite through those strips. They don't. And if they do, and we hear any kind of crunching, we stop using them immediately. But that's a great way to start that hand-to-mouth practice. Then what I do is I dip those strips. So I might dip the carrot in an avocado, or I might dip into a banana, into sweet potato. And that's a way to get it to their mouth. Then I might do the preloaded spoons. Once they're really good about grabbing the preloaded spoons and bringing it to their mouth, I start putting the preloaded spoons on the tray because I want to start focusing that baby's vision down to pick it up and bring it to their mouth, pick it up and bring it to their mouth. When they get really good at that, I'll just put the whole mash of food on the tray and they'll start to pick it up with their hands. So then they start doing all the eating with their hands. Then over time, they'll start to use their fingers to pick up that mash. And then they start to get more refinement with their fingers. And then we move to pieces. So that's kind of how I do it. Strips, dip strips, preloaded spoons, mashes on the tray, then to pieces. That's kind of my progression. And I show that in my class. I teach people how to do that.
Would have been so helpful for me. What would you say to parents like me who are really scared of choking? Actually, just last week I was talking to a parent who's like, I want to do baby lane weaning, but I'm scared. I'm like, you're talking to the wrong person. I'm scared of choking. Yep.
Remember, kids can choke on anything. They can be crawling on the floor and pick up something. So we always have to be careful with that. Also too, if baby's like drinking liquidy they can inhale it and they can aspirate it. So there's lots of things they can choke on. What I would say is I want babies to feed themselves. So I would start with those food teethers or those preloaded spoons, if that's what makes you comfortable. In my adapted baby-led weaning approach, which neurotypical babies can totally do it, it's very systematic. We use more of what's called bridge devices, like this little silicone feeder that I'm holding, and we can put things in there. It has little holes in it. Babies can chew, but they're still self-feeding until that parent feels confident enough, like, oh, my baby can chew. And then we can give them those foods outside of the feeder. I use silicone straws that I fill with yogurt and freeze it. That's another way to work on chewing. My adapted approach has lots of little steps in between for the non-confident parent that's terrified of choking. Believe me, it's the way I do it is so systematic. And I watch that baby, I see their skills, and then I can tell that parent exactly what foods would be safe for them to make sure that that baby doesn't choke with eating. It's a very normal fear that your baby could choke, but they can choke on anything. It doesn't just have to be a solid. They can also choke on a puree.
And it can happen at any age, really. But we're not going to go into that.
Yes. Yes. But I would say on my website, on my resources page, I have two links to two trainings. One's a CPR course, one's a choking course. I recommend everybody take it. I took both of the courses and they're not that long. We know that new parents, their attention span is very limited, but it gives you so much confidence. And that way, you know what to do if you're in that situation. Like we need to know what to do if a baby is choking, right? We need to know if it's just coughing or when it's really choking. So it's very important to take those classes and to be prepared. Always, always, always be prepared. I had a family where the dad was feeding the daughter and the daughter choked and the dad panicked. He froze. And the mom is a physician. Thank goodness she was there and she was able to help. But I mean, we know that happens quite frequently. So do what you can to prepare yourself and know what to do if that situation arises.
I had a mom in group the other day ask if your baby can choke on milk.
Well, what would happen is they would aspirate it. So right. If you're drinking milk and maybe your baby got distracted and they breathe in instead, it's very uncomfortable and it goes down the wrong way, but it's not going to occlude your airway. Right. It's going to go into your lungs, but still that's a very unpleasant experience. You know, when something goes down the wrong way, how awful it is. So we want to avoid that from happening, but it's really the things we want to avoid are anything that's going to plug that airway, right? Anything round and small that can fit right in there. And that's the thing. Our culture used to intuitively think, oh, small pieces are safer. Small pieces are not safer for babies learning to eat because you need a lot of control to move a small piece of food around in your mouth. So if a baby gets a small piece of food in the center of their mouth, like a blueberry, and they don't know how to move it and chew, guess what they're going to do? They're going to swallow it. Mm-hmm. And that's where it gets dangerous because that little blueberry can fit right into their airway. So with baby-led approaches, we tend to start with really big foods. Then we move to smaller foods once they have more refined fine motor skills. And then we go back to big foods that we take bites off of, like a sandwich, a slice of pizza. So we go big, small, big. And mm-hmm. what we select is going to be based on the skill of that baby.
So what misinformation do you hear out there from families about their children's feeding?
that they need to start giving solids at 4 months because their babies need food, that they're not getting enough nutrition. I also think that parents think that babies need so much volume at the onset of starting solids, and they do not. Really, those first 8 to 12 weeks are going to be about exploration and not volume. I think that parents have to stop getting overly concerned about growth charts and being worried about those growth percentiles and just watching their child's cues, making sure that their child's enjoying food, getting exposed to lots of different foods, and eating together as a family. I think that our culture focuses way too much on volume and growth. And I think if parents could be taught how to read babies' cues versus looking at a chart that says your baby should get 4 ounces of purees 3 times a day, the world would be a happier place.
So as far as the 4 month recommendation, though, I mean, I've listened to interviews about the, you know, the peanut study about introducing it 4 months. Do you feel like unless there is an egg or peanut allergy in the family, they really shouldn't start until
there's
after?
No reason to do that. And actually, I can send you guys that. I'm in my class. I actually teach. I have the research article and the mm-hmm. there's three different things. You know, the first thing being if there's extreme eczema and egg allergy in the family, you should start at 4 months. They have guidelines based on what the symptomatology is. And I think it's a great resource for anybody listening to this podcast to take a look at that. And in that situation, it's different. I also with my patients, I encourage families, if there's a really bad food allergy history in the family, I encourage parents to make that allergist appointment before they start solids, because here's what's going to happen. You cannot get into an allergist, at least here in Illinois, for 3 months. So if you expose your child to dairy, for example, right at 6 months and they have a reaction, you're not going to be able to see somebody for 3 months. So it's really good to go in there and say to your doctor, okay, my older child was allergic to eggs, peanuts. How do I navigate this? What do I do? What do I do? Do I do the allergen in your office? You want to really be guided by an allergist. I think that that's very, very important. I don't know that pediatricians would agree with me on that one, but I'm going to tell you that I work with so many babies with complex feeding issues. And a lot of times it stems from allergies and fear because those children felt horribly after they had an allergic reaction. You want that allergist there to guide you. And once you're in part of that practice, you can go on a whim, they're going to let you in. But if you're a new patient, you're going to have to wait 3 months.
But in general, if you don't have allergy, like related issues in your family, the idea is to start exposing them at an early age, correct?
But 6 months is fine. 6 months is absolutely fine. You can literally expose your child to all 9 allergens in 9 weeks. So Katie Ferraro, who I was talking to you about, the baby-led wean team, what she does is she starts with an allergen week 1, and she has the parents present that allergen twice a day, Friday, twice a day, Saturday, twice a day, Sunday. If the baby does well with that, that allergen is now incorporated into their diet, and they continue to present it frequently. And then the following Friday, the next allergen, until you get through all 9 allergens.
So different than, yes. I mean, Linda, like, you know, your kids and my oldest, like you had to wait a full year before you could give any type of berry and eggs and dairy, like the whole thing, you know, 15 years ago was way different than what it is now.
Absolutely. And I will tell you too, they're on Katie Ferraro has this BLW podcast. She has a great podcast called Why You Don't Need to Wait 3 to 5 days Between Foods. There's no research that supports that. If you did that with your kids, by the time they're 1, they're going to be exposed to way less foods, right? And if there's no allergies in the family, the ones that we need to be concerned about are the allergens. And she teaches people how to do this very systematically. And literally, you're starting at 6 months. By the time your child's 8 months, they've been exposed to most of those allergens.
Yeah. I mean, my daughter is 18. So obviously the recommendations were very different, as I know with your kids as well. But I remember so clearly being at her 2-year-old checkup. She had already had peanut butter, but the pediatrician was saying to me at that moment, I would still wait on giving her peanuts for a little bit longer. Literally at that moment, my daughter was pawing around in my bag trying to find the peanut butter crackers.
And I was like, oh, you're like, stop, you're making me look bad.
I know, because I knew, I mean, we didn't have any allergies in the family. Peanut butter and jelly is like the best food to feed your kid. It was so easy. And so she'd have them and it was fine. And now the recommendations are totally opposite. It's
right,
changed
what they,
completely.
Right, because what they were finding, I think it started in Israel, because they all do Bamba in Israel, and they're realizing, like, hey, they don't have the peanut allergy problems we do. With my kids, I have a 26 and a 28-year-old. Do you know when we could start peanut butter? When they were 3.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? And what we're doing is creating more allergies, right? There was no peanut-free tables when I was growing up. So
No.
anyway, again, I feel like we take a few steps forward and then we take a few steps backwards. But yes, allergens are very different, but there's a very systematic way to do it. And if there's no significant allergy history in your family, starting at 6 months is fine. You're going to get those nine allergens in 9 weeks.
Yeah. So, what kind of reaction would your child have if they're going to have an allergic reaction? That's a
Well,
question that comes up a lot.
it's going to be different, right? And that's where the allergist is going to come in. Some people might have skin reactions, some might have immediate vomiting and respiratory reactions. So it's scary, right? You have to be very ready. And I feel like when you have those families with high allergy risk, it's so important to be guided by an allergist on how to do it so it's safe.
For sure.
But the reaction is pretty much immediate. Is that the
I
idea?
think, although sometimes I think, because I'm not an allergist or an allergy expert, but with some babies, I think sometimes the first time they might have a little reaction and that reaction may start to increase. So that's why you need that allergist in there to tell you exactly what to do. And if you go on that BLW podcast, she has a bunch of allergists on there that talk about ways to introduce allergens and what to do. She often has Ron Sunog on there. He's great. He has a book about introducing allergens, and it's just important for families to know that information in situations where there is a lot of food allergy.
This is so helpful to me in particular because I spend so much time talking to moms of very young babies. And on my evaluations at the end of a 6-week session, when it says, like, what was the least helpful part of the group, they'll often say our conversation about solids because I don't feel like it's relevant. But this is why it's relevant because of that waiting period to get in to see somebody to be able to say to them, hey, if you have this family history, schedule this appointment now. By the time you're actually ready to start introducing some of these foods, then you'll probably be able to get in by then. And that's why at 2 months, it may be helpful to schedule an appointment with an allergist.
Absolutely. And guess what? There's lots of preparation that I do way before solids come. So a couple of important things. Tummy time is hugely important for solids because you're going to eventually be pushing up into your hands and you're going to get strength in your hands and your fingers and your wrists. That's going to help you to self-feed, right? It's also going to work on your core. We also want to watch parents. What do parents do? Think of all the swaddling parents do. It is not natural to be sleeping like this or to be sleeping as a baby with your hands at your side. Hands should be here. Hands and fingers to your mouth. That's self-soothing. It desensitizes your gag. That gets babies ready for solids. I also even recommend specific teething toys to help desensitize the gag. All of those things, the motor development, the hand-to-mouth development, the teething toy development, those are all prerequisites before you do solids. So you are actually preparing for solids long before babies are putting any type of food in their mouth.
And eating in front of your child. We have this conversation all the time. When you're a new parent, when do you eat? When they're asleep. Because you're like, oh, I have two hands. Now I can go eat. But eating is a social experience. You're modeling it. And it's a great time saver to eat when they're awake and they're watching you eat. And now you can do something else while they're sleeping.
Absolutely. And that's a problem with our culture too. We do those things when babies are sleeping. There's a great book called Hunt Gather Parent. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. And she talks about in that book that we in the United States, we focus so much on playing and doing things with their kids when they're awake. And then we do all the chores when they're sleeping, right? Cleaning up. And she says that we need to be involving them in all of those things. And there's cultures around the world where that's just expected. That baby is part of that family unit and everybody does everything together. So eating is one of those things.
Absolutely.
This is so interesting. Like, all of it is so interesting. We briefly spoke about it before with the Facebook groups, but can you tell us a little bit about the impact of social media on parents' understanding and experience the feeding? Because we all know it definitely affects their ideas about it. But what are your feelings about all of this?
Well, I think social media is a blessing and a curse, right? There's a lot of great information out there, but there's also a lot of scary information out there. And I think that what the message I get from a lot of my moms is they are so overwhelmed. They are being assaulted by information and marketing every minute. We all know that we look at one thing on our phone, and all of a sudden we're getting thousands of advertisements for whatever it is that we looked at. So when you're looking on your feed on baby feeding, you're going to start to get every account in there. And it's very hard for parents to filter out what is truth and what's nonsense. And I think that there's a lot of young, savvy marketing people out there I see this with therapists in my profession all the time. They're super savvy and they have these beautiful accounts and they're incredible marketers, but it's a lot of smoke and mirrors, right? They don't have a lot of experience, but they know how to market to parents and they have 100,000 followers. And, you know, it's really sad in our culture that we're more about like, wow, they have 100,000 followers. This person must be relevant. And I'm going to tell you, that's not the case. You know, there's someone like me who, what I do, I have a passion for what I do. I know what I'm doing. I'm not out there to try to make gazillions of dollars and trick people. So parents have to be very scrutinizing. And I always say that just do your homework, pick accounts that you know are run by professionals. I mean, no one wants to be assaulted with an email every 5 minutes in their emails from these companies. One of my patients said, you know, you recommended this account, but I get a lot of emails. And I'm like, I know, but I'm telling you, she does give good information. You just want to make sure that you're picking accounts that are relevant and are backed up by research and evidence, and not just somebody who makes everything look really pretty and they're just focusing on just their child only. You can get great information from those accounts too. Maybe you find a great recipe or a great toy recommendation, but you have to be careful about what's being put out there and what's correct and what's not. And sometimes I just tell parents, stay off of your phone, put it away. Just put it away. Mm-hmm. It's actually really a nice thing to take a vacation from social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know this comes up all the time also with sleep consultants. There are so many out there that have like a bazillion followers. And I'm like, they spend all of their time creating all their social media content. Do they actually work with families? Do they talk to real human beings?
Exactly. I'm like, I know how much time it takes to do these posts because I do them. And I see people posting these beautiful, elaborate posts. So that's the thing. That's what I would say to a parent too. How much work and direct contact does that social media influencer have with families if they're spending that much time putting up all these posts, right? So very exactly. Good point.
For sure. This has been so helpful and you've shared so much great information. Is there anything that we didn't ask you about? Is there anything we missed?
No, I feel like we covered everything. People could always go to my website. I have a lot of free information on there. I have lots of stuff that people can look if they want to dive in a little deeper. I teach those classes to parents. People can always reach out to me if they have questions, parents, professionals. So I feel like everything's out there. My social media account has a lot of videos where I show what I'm doing, how to put it into practice. I think the best thing is when people can actually see something in a video, it's a lot more helpful because they can see how you're supposed to go about doing it. So I think always watching videos of things is going to be the most helpful.
Can you share that your Instagram and all your information and I'll contact share. Information as well so that we can share that with our audience?
Yeah. Sure. So my website is just www.jillraben.com and my Instagram is @JillRaben, ABLW, which stands for Adapted Baby Led Weaning.
And I'll share it in the show notes as well. Mm-hmm. And I know you do a regular class. Do you mm-hmm. do that like the first Saturday of the month? Is there a schedule to it? I don't know.
I tend to do it the second Saturday of the month, but I teach it live virtually. And I also have an on-demand that I can just send them the link and they can watch it. So people can watch it at their leisure if they can't be there at that set time. But I do it on a Saturday. That way working parents are able to do it as well. If there's a whole group of moms that want to do it, I'm happy to do it at a specific time for that group of people. Because my class literally holds your hand from the beginning to the end. I'm going to take you through everything that you need to do. It's like taking a little trip on how to do solids. And I feel like it's very helpful and informative because I think there's a lot of things out there about feeding in theory, but it's a lot better when someone can show you how to put it into practice.
And the class that you do on Saturdays, can people ask questions? Is it interactive?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So the class is about 90 minutes. And mm-hmm. then at the end, I'm usually on there for about 30 minutes answering questions.
Great. And if I had a group that all wanted to do like a class with you, they could do that as well.
Yep. And a perfect time to do that is actually at around 4 months. Mm-hmm. So that way we can get set because it's going to be, childs are going to be 8 weeks away. So I can absolutely do a virtual live class for everybody and just take them through.
Nice. Well, this has been amazing. We can't wait to share this with all of our listeners. Thank you so much. And for anybody who's listening, if you want more information about Jill, check out the show notes. You will see all of her contact information there. She's an amazing resource. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.